This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade, and welcome to Energy Matters, where we want to help you save money, to use technology, and to live a more sustainable lifestyle. And in the studio with me, my co-host, the Honorable John Noel, former state representative from the Georgia legislature. I mean, John, there is a difference between being sustainable and being green, right? I mean, there's a debate kind of about how green you can be. And I
wouldn't agree with that.
Yeah.
But then we don't agree on everything. But I wouldn't agree with that. I think you can. I think you're both. I think if you are a person that feels like being sustainable, or that is sustainable, or wants to lead a sustainable lifestyle, you are by nature green. You must be.
Yeah, you know, there's a number. I mean, people throw the word green around.
Oh, but, boy.
Yeah, but
and sustainable.
There's a cool article that I found on a college website about what color of green environmentalism are you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you bright green? Are you light green? Are you dark green? Or are you gray? And I think probably most of our listeners haven't really thought about that. I mean, they may be going, okay, I want to be more sustainable. I consider myself a green person. But when you start getting into the shades of green, you know, am I really a bright green person that, you know, that in its simplest form, a belief that sustainable innovation is the best path to lasting prosperity? I mean, we talk a lot about sustainability on this show. Are you light green, where you tend to emphasize lifestyle, behavior, consumer change as the key to sustainability? John, I think I'm constantly emphasizing this as, you know, driving an electric car, being on a time of use rate, putting solar thermal in my Winterville home. You know, I emphasize to people that action is important. Leading by example. You do too, right? You've got this stuff on your house.
It's a mutual admiration society in this particular instance, because I am grateful that you promote this and are the real pioneer, in my opinion, on the Public Service Commission to do this stuff. In my own life, all I want to do is basically get as close to living off the grid in Atlanta as I possibly can, and using as little water as I can, and just reducing my carbon footprint as much as I can. That is my ethic.
And I'm not going to put a label on you, but the dark greens believe in you know, taking control, direct control over one's life and surrounding. And, you know, that would be going off the grid. That is dark green behavior.
Yeah. And maybe a nerdy one, too, if you sit there and look at your iPhone all day and look at, you know, when you're off the grid, what your solar production is, what are the batteries contributing, those sort of things. I mean, there's a nerd aspect to this. If there were a bright green, there might even be an Amazon rainforest frog green, like neon green. I would love to be that.
Yeah. Well, you can find more about this on my Twitter feed at Tim Echols. And where are you at on Twitter, John?
At New Energy Guy.
Well, in our studio today with us to talk about an aspect of being green that would be 100% renewable energy for the Athens area is Carrie Ritzler and Michael Songster. Michael, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Tim.
And Carrie, it's good to have you in here as well.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, so I'm intrigued with this 100% Athens. I know Atlanta introduced this, and it's going around the country. And I've got an opinion about this that I'll share later. But I'd like to hear kind of what motivated, you know, this movement to happen. So who do we start with?
I can start. This is Carrie. Personally, started thinking about this a couple of years ago. I've been working on advocacy to combat climate change and reduce greenhouse emissions for a couple of years. I was working on things at the national level, and, you know, looking at these shades of green is really interesting to me because I can see parts in all of the different shades of green that apply to me, because I really feel like sustainability as a people and as a world needs to be at all levels, at the national level, at the state level, and at the local level, and at the individual level. And so the 100% Athens is really my attempt to make some change in my town, in my city, and I saw a lot of other countries, but also a lot of other cities in the country, in the United States, setting these goals a couple of years ago, and I thought, now's the time for Athens.
How about you, Michael?
So I think that Carrie's right. I think we both feel about that same way. But in addition to that, Athens has a strong and robust growing Office of Sustainability headed by Andrew Saunders. And I think that he's already doing a lot of the work to find those places within the Athens Clark County government where energy efficiency and adding renewables on site can make a difference, largely in many cases for the bottom line of the operating budget of Athens Clark County.
Well, which is a beautiful marriage, right? The bottom line and environmental sustainability happen to go hand in hand.
That's right. And Athens-Clark County, I think the folks that are involved in getting this going have a complete understanding that we can't go this alone. We're not an island in the energy system. But there are certainly things that we can do, things we can take control of within the county to make this more of a possibility moving forward.
So there's some talk about resources. Like, how do you build the resources required to actually go 100% Athens?
Well, every city that's done this has taken a different route, and it depends on the geography, it depends on the population, it depends on what the people want. And I don't think that we, at the outset of setting this goal, are ready to say this is what exactly Athens is going to look like.
Because technology changes, right? I mean, batteries
getting cheaper. Technology changes, gets better all the time,
right.
And that's what we're looking for, and that's certainly what I believe is going to happen. I think this is more of an inevitability, and we want to be on top of it as far as the transition to renewable and clean energy. You know, but the thing that I love about 100% and the idea of 100% is that it is for everybody. And if you've been in Athens, if you're any part of our community, then you know it's a strong community, and that's why I love living there, and I can't wait to see what it's like when everybody gets together to work towards this goal and accomplishes this goal. 100% doesn't leave anybody out. It's everybody. It's the whole community working together.
That's fabulous.
You know, one of the second things that you want is statewide regulations that support the transition. And I'm a state official. John served as a state official in the legislature. You're certainly going to have partnerships with the legislature, with entities like the Public Service Commission and Georgia Power. How do you see that materializing?
Well, I think that a lot of this kind of work depends on developing relationships and, you know, not looking at politics as a one party or another party, but looking at it as we are all working together. And so we would like to see the Public Service Commission push for policies that will promote the kind of energy solutions that we want to have at the local level. You know, when you go into things like the negotiating with Georgia Power over rules at the upcoming IRP, and things like that. I don't have, personally, all the solutions. I'm a school teacher and a mother. I just believe in this cause, and I'm trying to learn as fast as I can. And I hope that by reaching out to people and working with people and listening to people, that we can come up with, we can develop those sort of relationships to come up with the policies that are going to get us to our goals.
You know, John, the Georgia Solar Association, one of the things they've done so well is they've learned to speak Republican. They use the word, the phrase economic development a lot. Mm-hmm. They resisted coming to the commission and pressing us with Democratic ideology, let's say.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah, and trying to persuade us. And the fact is, it's worked. And we've got quite a bit of solar. So, you know, what advice would you give to our friends here in Athens on effectively lobbying a right now Republican Public Service Commission and a Republican General Assembly?
Economics are a powerful thing. And the beauty that we as environmentalists and greenies have on our side now is the trend is our friend. Solar power is getting cheaper, a lot cheaper. The curve on solar is just like falling off a cliff. Batteries, a lot cheaper. And as batteries get cheaper, as solar gets more cheap, solar efficiency goes up. Battery efficiency goes up. And so mothers and teachers like my friend here, Carrie, are finding that what they're advocating for actually makes economic sense. There was a day not many years ago where it was a harder lift for our Republican friends on the other side of the aisle that were all about the money. And now it's those that say, oh, well, you know, actually the money adds up too, and we can do the green thing too. Is this wonderful marriage, and that's what I think that's the beauty of what they're going after. And we're in this environment where the government's completely abdicated responsibility. Trump's pulled out of the daggum climate, the Paris climate thing. So cities, good ladies like her have been forced.
Yeah, somebody hand him that blood pressure cuff. Would you mind, Carrie? How do you respond to that? Here I'm asking you to learn to speak Republican. But you live in Athens, Clark County, one of the bluest, you know, islands in our state, smallest county in our state, and one of the bluest. And certainly, as you're speaking to county leaders, you don't have to speak Republican because they're not. But when you get on down to Atlanta under the Gold Dome, I think it just means you being nimble, versatile, mm-hmm. smart, crafty, right? Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have to say for myself, all I can be is honest to what I am and who I am, and try to treat people like people and that want to help people. And I think that's what anyone in government is trying to help, and I want to find a way for them to help me.
Well, stick around, because we're going to talk about honesty. Can a politician talk about that, John? We're going to talk about that in our next
segment.
Power of
the people, baby.
Continue talking about 100% renewable and talk about effective ways to influence public policy and lawmakers and commissioners. I'm Tim Echols, and you're listening to Energy Matters.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make. Like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit. And the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Welcome back to Energy Matters. Support for Energy Matters comes from Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, a law firm established in 1949 with the idea that building committed business relationships with clients while providing exceptional value helps achieve their goals. We want to welcome back Carrie Ritzler and Michael Songster of 100% Athens. So, guys, a lot of people say, well, this is pie in the sky, and how would you get this accomplished? And I'll throw that question out. I'm sympathetic to it. I would endorse it, but how do you do it?
Yeah, so I'm not going to pretend that that's not a big challenge, but I think the basic path has kind of been established as to how you go about getting it done. The first way is to convert to electricity for your energy needs. So electrify everything that you can. Number two, everything has to be significantly more efficient, and we're not talking about, you know, 10% or 20% more efficient.
You're talking hyper efficient.
Yeah, hyper efficient. Yeah. So we're building buildings that would be things that you could put rooftop solar on and essentially get to net zero. That type of efficiency.
And Georgia Tech's doing that right now.
Right. So yeah. those types of changes to our mindset on efficiency, and then. Third one is to build lots of renewables. So wherever we can, we put renewables within the city limit of Athens Clark County. And I think that that's important for cities to do, to shoulder as much of their energy generation as they possibly can. I mean, otherwise we're essentially asking rural areas to industrialize and supply our needs, which I don't think is entirely fair. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, grid scale solar is going to be required, but you know, cities should take some of that, I believe.
Carrie, what are are other cities doing? Are you studying what they're doing and kind of modeling after them?
So there's so many different kinds of models and ways people have done it. You know, some cities rely on things that we really don't have access to, like a lot of hydropower.
Yep, that's right.
But you have a city like Georgetown, Texas, which is the same. They worked with renewable developers and utilities to make big investments in large solar and wind farms. So that's the way Georgetown's doing it. As Michael said, we want to produce as much as we can on site right there in Athens as much as possible. You also have Atlanta. They're an example of a city that's kind of still figuring it out. They've set their resolution, but they don't. They're working out the details now. The one thing that we think we want to use to kind of kickstart this transition in Athens is we want to devote a percentage of the SPLOST 2020 funds that are about to be voted on next year to develop a fund for efficiency and renewable projects. And it would just create a fund that government entities in our city government, it's actually a unified government, could grab onto to pay for the additional cost of, say, instead of buying a new truck that uses gasoline, buying an electric truck. So we would just have a sort of completion fund.
All right, jargon alert for people that aren't nerds like me. What does SPLOST mean?
Oh, sorry. That's Special Purpose Local Option Sales Tax. It's a 1 cent tax that's 1% tax.
Assessed in a certain area.
Sales tax.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
I don't even know how many years Athens has been running a SPLOST, but it's used for different things. It's kind of a big pile of money, and then everybody says, hey, I want some. And we're saying,
dedicate
we want some.
Yeah.
Dedicate it to 100% Athens. Not
quarter
all of
cent,
it.
Half cent? What kind of some piece of it?
We want 10%.
You want 10%.
We call it 10% for 100%.
All right, so you want a tenth of of 1 cent.
We want a tenth
of
the
1 cent.
1 cent sales tax.
And how much will
developed.
That generate?
Is it?
What's it estimated to generate?
Yeah, our proposal was actually for 17. The request was $17 million. The term of time for the next SPLOST for Athens Clark County has been shifting. Now they're actually talking about a 10-year SPLOST that may be $260 million. So
yeah, you start talking money, you start talking like Tim Eccles wants to hear about the money part. I mean, this is what he lives for.
Let's show me the money.
Yeah,
let's talk about the money. So at the current proposal of $17 million, which, as Kerry said, could be used at the county's
discretion. For large capital projects.
Yeah, it's only available for capital projects.
Okay.
And so we can purchase battery electric buses with it. We can renovate.
There's a big whack right there.
We can renovate buildings,
the library,
and make them more energy efficient. We can put solar on buildings. We can, you know, we're replacing a roof on a building. We can add insulation before we put that roof back.
Or put a green roof on it.
You can put a green roof on it.
Yeah.
So that it's projected that the county would save approximately $1.3 million per year in operating costs.
So let me tell you what your millions will buy. Yeah.
All right, I just cut the ribbon on what will be the largest solar array east of the Mississippi River.
That's a big solar array.
2,400 acres in Twiggs County, not too far from Warner Robins Air Force Base. That 2,400 acres, and that's a lot of land. That 2,400 acres will generate about 200 megawatts. And for our listeners, think about a super Walmart. Think about the two Walmarts in Athens that, you know, use about a megawatt apiece. A super Target, a megawatt apiece. So when you start looking at the load around Athens-Clark County, you're going to need a lot of power. A lot of power. So that 2,400-acre solar array, the capital investment on that is about $230 million to build out an array that would power 200 megawatts. So, you know, what I want to suggest to Athens-Clark County is working with the Public Service Commission, working with Georgia Power, and doing something like we're doing with this commercial and industrial solar array that is attracting companies to Georgia, and that is, you're going to pay a little bit extra on your bill, and Georgia Power is going to build out the array and supply it to them. So if Athens-Clark County decided that they were going to take a special tax if they wanted to do this, and that all the residents in Athens-Clark County would be getting power from solar arrays that may or may not be in Athens Clark. They may be in an adjacent county, something like that, where the land's a lot cheaper. 2,400 acres in Clark County would cost you
Ching-a-ling.
An absolute fortune. What do you think about that?
Sure. Michael? Well, and I think that we're talking about something a little bit different than that. And if you talk about adding a little bit to our energy cost in order to fund a portion of, you know, a grid scale solar project, we're eliminating one of the lines of our triple bottom line that this is all about, which is we're not going to get the savings within our own community from the efficiency and from the generation. So I think that it is important, like I said, for communities to shoulder some of this responsibility. I don't, you know, at all imagine that you know, projects like the Twiggs County project aren't going to be necessary, and we're all going to be involved in that. But that's not the only thing I think we need to be doing.
You know, what's incredible about the Twiggs project and the Butler, Georgia project down in Taylor County is because we're building it at such scale, it is actually decreasing everyone's electricity ever so slightly.
Cost, yep.
So not only is it not subsidized, it's actually lowering
It's a lowering negative impact on rates.
Your rate. Yeah. So to me, as a regulator, man, I want to do more of that. I want to build more big solar.
Right.
So that the percentage of our energy in Georgia that comes from renewables is larger.
Right.
And everyone's bill decreases. I mean, to me, that seems like the triple win, John. What
do you think? There's no question it does. The problem comes in how much baseload generation do we have sunk cost into, and that's where things get dicey. And also, as some of your listeners will be aware, they've replaced all the light bulbs in their house to LED. Their home energy bills aren't going up, and their building energy bills aren't going up. And what's happening in the country is our energy consumption has flatlined instead of increased. You just assume, like, the economy goes up, the energy consumption goes up. It's not. Thanks to efficiencies, thanks to Athens, and all of us as individuals attacking our energy use, our consumption is flatlining or going down, which means we don't need all the new generation, which means we better retire a lot of coal plants if you want to build all those solar farms.
Yeah, we only have 5 plants left, and I don't think we'll ever build another one here in Georgia. So, Michael and Kerry, as we wrap up this segment, what kind of response are you getting from county leaders, from business leaders, from university leaders? Are you getting some love from them?
We got a lot of love at the climate rally back in September, I believe it was. We had our mayor, the upcoming mayor and commission who are going to be taking their seats in January, are strongly in favor of passing a 100% renewable energy resolution. So we've felt really good about the reception we've gotten from them.
John, certainly county and city leaders are important, especially if you're going to be putting a tax on folks. They have to sign off on that. They have to feel good about that. But, I mean, clearly working with these larger entities like the power company, and we've got in Athens, Georgia Power, and the surrounding EMCs can help make it happen. I mean, do you envision a day where we've got these cities that are running on 100, or should they be happy with 50?
They should be happy with 50 if they got 0, and they should be happy with 100 when they get to 100, because we got to get to 100. I think environmentalists have realized that this administration and the government right now, pulling out of climate, Paris, and all this other stuff, has forced the hands of entities like businesses that want to do good, that cities that want to do good, and citizenry that want to do good. And that's why this is getting pushed. And fortunately, I think what Kerry and Michael have talked about is exactly right. They want to make hyper-efficient their government operations, drive down their usage, and drive up their energy energy production. And so when you do those two things, you're getting close to 100.
Well, Kerry and Michael, good luck in your efforts working here in Athens Clark County.
Thanks so much, Tim. Thanks,
Thank
John.
You.
Well, you've been listening to Energy Matters, and we'll come back and talk about effective ways to lobby public officials when it comes to solar and all things energy. I'm Tim Atlas. Sometimes you can't.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by the Racy Anderson Highway.
Welcome back to Energy Matters. Support for Energy Matters comes from The Ray, an 18-mile stretch of Interstate 85 running near LaGrange to the Alabama line. The Ray is an independent nonprofit that seeks to catalyze the interstate corridor and its exits into a global model for regenerative transportation. Executive Director Allie Kelly believes that roads can be safe, sustainable, and regenerative. See more at theray.org.
Thanks, John. John is my co-host. He's a former state representative, John Noel. In our studio, we have Kodiak Sauer, who is a volunteer with Citizens Climate Lobby, and Dr. Mark Farmer. And Dr. Farmer, I think we initially met when I was getting a master's in the Grady College.
That may be, Tim, yeah. I've been at UGA for quite a while.
Yeah, a while back. So, you know, Citizens Climate Lobby is a group that I interact with on a fairly regular basis. I speak at some of their events, and I would say they, quote, lobbied me. Nothing wrong with lobbying. It's just a person letting their opinion be known about something. But I have been impressed, Kodiak, by the fact that Citizen Climate Lobby, they're friendly, they're warm, they're caring, they're not picketing out in front of my office. They're taking a softer, more gentler approach. Is that intentional?
Well, here at Citizens Climate Lobby, we really believe that any solution to these problems really has to come bipartisan, and we are a nonpartisan organization, nonprofit. We say, you know, lobbyists, but we're all here volunteers. We're not getting paid for any of this. And so Citizens Climate Lobby likes to take the approach that really relationships matter in politics and in life, and that building relationships is how we solve problems.
Yeah. Mark, I mean, you have, I've seen you up, you know, at the chapel doing events around campus, and you agree with Kodiak in terms of the approach?
Absolutely. I mean, Citizens Climate Lobby is really focused at implementing policies at the national level. And so we regularly meet with our local representatives of Congress. I've met personally with representatives of Jody Heiss multiple times. About a couple of months ago, had a sit down one-on-one with Doug Collins. And so one of the things that Citizens Climate Lobby is laser focused on is moving the needle in terms of carbon emissions for the future. And we're not, as Kodiak said, focused on one political party or another. One of the things that we take great pride in is that we currently have a major role in the formation of the largest caucus, bipartisan caucus in the U.S. Congress, and that's the Climate Solutions Caucus, which currently has 90 members. Interestingly, in order to be a member of that caucus, you have to join with a member of the other party. So this is the only caucus I'm aware of which is equally split between Democrats and Republicans.
I did
not
know that.
You know, you were a legislator, and there are all kind of caucuses, right, in a legislature.
Think cabals.
Can you kind of define and differentiate caucuses for our listeners?
Yeah, so generally it's formed around a common interest. Could be ethnic makeup. Could be a business or environmental interest. So a caucus could be the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus. It could be the Citizens Climate Lobby Caucus, which would be interested parties in that. I love the fact that it is a bipartisan caucus in the federal level. I did not know that, and I think that's the most effective way to go about it.
You know, there's been all kind of comments about the, you know, civility being gone in politics. I mean, without referring to any specific election, I just think about these times that we're in. It's a little bit discouraging to me that, you know, that people won't sit down and talk, that they won't build relationships. These things take time, but I almost feel like some of these folks think in their mind they're doing the right thing. They're being effective. But being effective is important to the Citizen Climate Lobby. And do you guys have ways of measuring that? Do you have leadership who are training your volunteers in how to do this, and how does that work?
So as far as the effectiveness, that's really what we're focused on. We're laser focused on passing this bill into law, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And in order to pass lasting, strong legislation, it has to be bipartisan. So you talked about polarization in our politics these days. Then that is such an issue. And you can't solve problems that way. That leads to gridlock. And even if you do end up passing something like this most recent tax bill or like Obamacare, the other party is constantly talking about repealing it. They're trying to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And so in order to have something last that is effective, you have to do it bipartisan. You have to build relationships. You have to reach across the aisle.
That's a good point.
John.
That's a good point.
You were elected to the Georgia House of Representatives, and you've run for other offices. I've run for the Public Service Commission, and you're out there on the trail. You're talking, you're talking to people. You've got the base, right?
Yep.
Your party base.
Yep, my environmental base.
Your environmental. Are there other bases
the
out there? I mean, for me, yeah. I've got my religious base, right? Mm-hmm. So as a father of seven, being very active mm-hmm. in the pro-life community, having mm-hmm. seven children myself, mm-hmm. that's a part of my base.
No question. Yeah.
And those people, the people in your base, they want to know that you're still with them, right? How does that work? And mm-hmm. as you speak to your base, that's a challenge.
It doesn't always have to be incongruent. I'll give you an example. When in rural areas, especially in South Georgia, I would talk about the aspect that solar would have on their own lives. They'd say, "Well, if I farm mighty hard, I might make $500 an acre." On a good year, but if I lease this farm to a solar farm, then I can make $1,000 lease payment an acre, and I don't have to do anything, and that's reoccurring revenue, and so it was able to. When you talk about that, you're talking about clean energy as a way to bring income to rural areas that is a little different, and so there's an opportunity to take an otherwise. Potentially, in my case, I'm a Democrat, potentially a Republican voter, bring them over, a conservative voter, bring them over, and not abandon my environmental friends. I think these things don't have to be disparate, and that's what I really like about the Citizens Climate Lobby is they're bringing this idea that we are all in it together.
Mark, words matter, and I know I went to an event that you had at the chapel that featured a congressman from South Carolina. And this congressman was unelected. He served, and then he was basically put out of office by, in a Republican primary. And many people felt like that he got too far out there on the environmental limb, so to speak. And he was too much in the Democratic Party camp on some of these issues. And so, what do you say to Republicans like me, right, who want to be good stewards? I'm an evangelical. I care about this world that God's created. I want to take care of it. I want to do these personal activities like driving an electric car and putting solar on my home and going on a time of use rate and using LED bulbs. I want to do all that, but I sometimes feel like people are trying to paint me into a corner and make me say certain words and make me agree and use certain phrases. And I almost feel like they're trying to trap me. They're trying to, get me out of office. What do you say to Republican officials like me?
It's really troubling to me, Tim, that this issue has become so polarizing, and that when we talk about base and the supporting people of a particular idea, that we are locked into this mindset. For me, what I always tell people is, a molecule of carbon dioxide doesn't really care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. An infrared photon of heat doesn't really have a political ideology. And the person you're talking about, Bob Inglis, who was a six-term congressman from South Carolina, basically his stepping out from his orthodoxy was solely based on his concern for the future of humanity. If I could just read one quick quote from a politician in 1990, "We all know that human activities are changing the atmosphere in unexpected and unprecedented ways. Together, we have the responsibility to ourselves and generations to come to fulfill our stewardship obligations." Well, that was the late President George H.W. Bush who said that.
Wow. You know, when George W. Bush got elected, I was reading a Time magazine article that was showing all the different energy savings, energy efficiency stuff in his West Texas house, John. You know, from geothermal stuff to solar to all this efficiency, and I never heard about that at any meeting or saw about that any other time.
No, and you wouldn't have guessed it because he gutted everything when he got in there.
Other than that Time magazine article.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know, it is hard trying to balance these issues. I think this is worth us talking more about. I want us to continue this conversation, you know, in our next segment. John, as we wrap up this segment, though, I mean, your thoughts on what Mark said about the difficulty that officials are in and how people try to pin them down and make them say things.
Mark and Kodiak are making excellent points. I mean, this is the problem, and our recent elections have helped, you know, illustrate the fact that there is this. You don't see a lot more crossover votes. You're not finding people that are willing to sort of take a middle ground. It's either my way or the highway, and that's not helpful to our planet. It's not helpful to humanity, but. Kudos to these guys for taking it on and to that entity for doing it.
Hey, when we come back, I want to hear Mark and Kodiak about your top five concerns, you know, as you work in this space. And I also want to play a little game called Ask the Enviros and get y'all's opinion.
We're ready.
Some questions that a professor from the Vermont School of Law asks. You're listening to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Eccles. John, one of our sponsors for the show, Row Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854, Row Insulating Company. Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy
right.
Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable. Welcome back to Energy Matters. I'm John Noel, joined by our host, Commissioner Tim Eccles, and our special guests, Kodiak Sauer and Mark Farmer of the Citizens Climate Lobby. Gentlemen, we've been talking a lot about how to do climate change the right way and advocating it to our elected officials, but then that always gets to policy. And there was a reference earlier to this carbon-free and dividend legislation, as y'all are calling it, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Holy moly, give us the short version on that one.
So the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act is the result of years of effort from both the Citizens Climate Lobby and the bipartisan work of the Climate Solutions Caucus. And basically, in short, we just want to price pollution and give the money to the people. That's all it is. It includes a border adjustment, so we're not disadvantaging American companies. And that's the short of it.
And so 70 legislators have signed on to this at the federal level.
So it's seven right now.
Oh, seven.
Growing. So there's three Republicans and four Democrats that are current co-sponsors. It's the first bipartisan climate change fighting proposal since 2009. So it's a big deal.
Super cool. Okay.
And we had mentioned Bob Inglis earlier. Essentially, this is the same basic premise that Bob Inglis had back in 2009, which is what unfortunately got him booted out of Congress. And so we hope that this is an idea whose time has finally come, because the goal here is to take a free market approach to dealing with the issues of carbon pollution, not to ask for more legislation or more regulations, but basically to have people pay their fair share for the costs of energy use, and to modify people's behaviors based on those actual
you
costs.
Are talking so, Commissioner Echols language.
Let me give you my concern. You know, I'm a big promoter of nuclear energy, and we're building a nuclear power plant that is carbon free, by the way, completely carbon free in its emissions. And oftentimes people come to me and say, what about the waste? And yet there are NGOs, non-governmental organizations, nonprofit organizations that are actively working to keep us from being able to do anything constructive with that, quote, waste, whether that be storing it out at Yucca Mountain out west, or reprocessing it like our French friends do and essentially recycling it. And so the back end of the fuel cycle, or the back end of the plant where the waste is, it gets clogged up. I mean, excuse the analogy, it gets constipated. And as a result of that, people feel like, well, we don't need to do any more nuclear energy because we can't even take care of this waste. So it seems to me that the priority, if we're prioritizing spending, it should be to keep a promise that an earlier Congress made, and let's take care of this nuclear waste and enable nuclear energy to, you know, resume in our country at a brisk pace, and then let's worry about the CO2 later, because we help ourselves by getting carbon-free nuclear energy out there. It is baseload. It runs all the time. I mean, what about that, Mark Kodiak? I mean, am I wrong in thinking that nuclear energy is a part of the solution?
So those NGOs that you're talking about, that's not us. The reason why big industry and companies like ExxonMobil have endorsed our proposal is because we are technology neutral. We don't care how you solve the problem. We just want a true cost comparison, put all the price in, take all the subsidies out, and compare the different types of fuels on the market. Let the market decide it.
Yeah.
And you said nuclear probably has a role in this. I mean, I brought these data. And, you know, we, like I said, we're technology neutral, but certainly, I mean, every projection that I've ever looked at shows that nuclear is a big part in the future. I mean, that its role expands if you put a fee on carbon, if you internalize that externality.
Yeah, and I'm getting to look at this chart, and if you go to my Twitter feed, I'll have this chart up here, hashtag Energy Matters. I'm at Tim Echols and John, you're at
New Energy Guy.
And are you guys on a Twitter handle you would like to share?
Sure, at Kodiak Sauer.
KodiakSauer. And could you put that chart up as well?
Absolutely.
Kodiak. I mean,
I'll
John, I mean, what about my theory about let's take care of this earlier promise? Or do you think that train's left the station, nothing we can do, too expensive? Can't go down that path.
That's an interesting chart that they're showing, talking about when you start pricing carbon, that nuclear becomes more attractive. That's probably the most compelling chart I've seen ever in the last couple years, at a minimum, on nuclear. It makes no economic sense in any other respect. I'm anti-nuclear, and I think the waste is a big problem. But what I really like about what they're going after is they're trying to find a free market approach to it. And moving the nuclear stuff aside, there's so many other things we can agree on, particularly with renewables and with battery emergence of battery technology. I think I'd rather attack that stuff first.
And Tim, you talked about the expense, and I think that's one of the reservations that a lot of people have, is this is going to cost me too much. This is going to bankrupt the United States economy, when in fact all the projections show that moving to these new technologies will actually be beneficial for most aspects of our economy. And in terms of the cost, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act starts out at a base load of $15 a ton. That may sound like a lot to your listeners, $15, but it basically translates to 15 cents a gallon at the pump. We've all seen gasoline prices change more than that in the past year. So it's designed to phase in up until the point when we're either hitting our projections in terms of carbon dioxide reduction. Once we hit those, basically this whole act has a built-in sunset clause. When we reach a point in which we are not generating that much carbon dioxide, then the amount of fees goes down to the point where it becomes zero. So we are not talking about another program that's going to last for 100 years or become part of the permanent landscape of the U.S. Tax system. It's really designed to address a single problem, and once that problem is addressed, then it goes away.
So your technology neutral, you don't really care whether it's solar or wind or nuclear, you just want to see the reduction.
It could even be burning coal if you find a way to sequester that carbon dioxide before it gets up into the atmosphere. Absolutely.
So, John.
Interesting.
You know, the Kemper plant over in Mississippi.
Ooh, what a success story that was.
Yeah, went down for those listening. The Southern Company was building on a coal field, essentially, a new technology, coal gasification,
mm-hmm.
where you wouldn't burn coal in the traditional manner. You would gasify it. It's a cleaner way to use the resource.
Yeah.
But they eventually just gave up on that and turned it into a gas plant. I mean, to be fair, President Obama, you know, was in support of this at the beginning of his term. Mm-hmm. And I think he read the tea leaves that the environmental left in our country, they didn't want to have anything to do with coal at all, no matter how you sliced it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, John, your trip to China, you mm-hmm. saw unscrubbed coal plants with particulate matter coming mm-hmm. out. We don't have any plants like that left in Georgia. Yet the environmental left paints coal with all the same brush. It's all like that. But mm-hmm. but in fact, it's not true. There are cleaner ways to do it. But
that are being done, though, I don't think.
And Kodiak, I just think that coal is, its reputation is damaged in our country, and I just don't see it making a comeback for a very long time.
And we're not advocating for coal, Tim. I was simply using that as an example that we are completely agnostic as to how energy is produced in the future, with the one exception that whatever energy we use to run our industry, heat our homes, power our transportation systems, that it be as close to carbon neutral as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me ask about efficiency and conservation and storage. I know sometimes people don't see those as green as renewable energy itself, but do you all see those as important? Or does that fit into that technology neutral box?
So as far as energy efficiency is concerned, that really gets to the individual responsibility aspect of this problem, where if you put a price on pollution, that changes people's behavior. So we put a price on pollution. Mark talked about it. It'll raise gas prices a little bit. Those industries aren't gonna front that cost. They're gonna pass that cost down to the consumer. But that's why we take all the money that's generated. That's why we give it right back to people. So if I give you a $50 carbon dividend check and your monthly energy expenses go up by $30, you're doing just fine. And maybe if you're civically minded, environmentally minded, or just economically minded individual, you take that extra 20 bucks and you use it to be more efficient. So you can replace all the incandescent light bulbs in your house, and maybe the next month, your energy prices are only $25 more expensive than they would have been. And you have $25 to do something else, to do something to make yourself more energy efficient.
Yeah, free market.
Final thoughts, Mark?
Yep.
I agree with what John just said. Free market approach is really what the CCL is all about, and what really I think is encompassed in this act. And I hope that more of our local congressional representatives, regardless of their political persuasions, can get behind it and do what's right for the future generations.
Where can they find out more?
So if you
go
to the
website.
Yeah. So the website of the CCL is CCLUSA.org.
And if you want to learn more about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, go to energyinnovationact.org.
And I'm sure you can Google that if you forget. Well, John, great having these two in studio today.
Really great.
We've learned a lot, and I do appreciate the approach that you guys take to lobbying public officials. I'm Tim Eccles. You've been listening to Energy Matters, where we want to help you save money, use technology, and live a more sustainable lifestyle.